Today is Tuesday, September the 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden received his COVID-19 vaccine booster shot at the White House just days after booster doses were approved by federal health officials.
Now, I know it doesn't look like it, but I am over 65. I wish I way over. And that's why I'm getting my booster shot today.
And a judge says that the man who tried to assassinate President Ronald Reagan can be released unconditionally. No representative from Afghanistan will address the UN General Assembly in New York after the ambassador for the government ousted by the Taliban, who was due to speak, withdrew his name.
Over the weekend, the Afghan mission here in New York notified the UN that they were withdrawing from the debate and that they wouldn't be speaking.
And singer R. Kelly has been convicted by a federal jury in his sex trafficking trial. Prosecutors accused the R&B singer of using his stardom to exploit and abuse women and underage girls. And for our top story, U.S. President Joe Biden received a COVID-19 vaccine booster shot on Monday at the White House in front of the media, hoping to provide a powerful example for Americans on the need to get the extra shot, even as millions go without their first shot.
I'm about to get my booster shot and do it publicly. That's because the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, looked at all the data, completed their review, and determined the boosters for the Pfizer vaccine, others will come later, maybe, I assume, but the Pfizer vaccine are safe and effective. They've had all the data they need. And last week, they laid out who is eligible for those boosters for now. You're eligible for a booster if it's been 6 months since your second Pfizer shot, and if you fall into one of these categories. People over 65, which is hard to acknowledge. Adults, I'm only joking, folks. Adults with certain underlying health conditions like diabetes and obesity. And those who are at increased risk of COVID-19 because of where you work or where you live, like healthcare workers, teachers, first responders, grocery store clerks. If you fall into these categories, you're eligible for the booster.
Millions of Americans remain unvaccinated. President Biden called on them to get their shots and shore up protection against the highly transmissible Delta variant. He said that this was a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
But the most important thing we need to do is get more people vaccinated. The vast majority of Americans are doing the right thing. Over 77% of adults have gotten at least one shot. About 23% haven't gotten any shots. And that distinct minority is causing an awful lot of us, damage for the rest of the country. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That's why I'm moving forward with vaccination requirements wherever I can. On Wednesday, I'll be traveling to Chicago to talk about why it's so important that more businesses are instituting their own vaccine requirements. We know that to beat this pandemic and to save lives, to keep our children safe, our schools open, our economy going, we need to get folks vaccinated. So please, please do the right thing. Please get the shots. And it can save your life. It can save the lives of those around you. And it's easy, accessible, and it's free.
That was U.S. President Joe Biden. And the U.S. House of Representatives began debate on a $1 trillion infrastructure bill ahead of a planned vote Thursday on a measure that is a major part of President Joe Biden's domestic agenda. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the debts in a letter to Democratic lawmakers Sunday, and in television interviews, she expressed confidence that the bill will pass. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports it's a consequential week for President Biden's agenda as Democratic leaders delicately trim back his $3.5 trillion Build Back Better package to win over remaining lawmakers and to work quickly to pass legislation to avoid a federal shutdown.
The plan stands to run into a blockade by Republican senators. Congress has until the end of the month to avoid a government shutdown. Meanwhile, negotiations continue on two other bills important to President Biden's agenda, the $3.5 trillion Build Back Better package, which Democrats are trimming back to win over remaining lawmakers, and the related $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package, which also continues to be negotiated and has a vote scheduled for Thursday. I'm Julie Walker.
Voice of America.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. No representative from Afghanistan will address the UN General Assembly in New York. That is after the ambassador for the government ousted by the Taliban, who was due to speak, withdrew his name. The move comes amid competing claims for Afghanistan's UN seat in New York after the Taliban seized power last month. Myanmar also withdrew their speaking slot. The elected governments of both countries were overthrown earlier this year. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir joins me to talk about this and other diplomatic activity as the UN General Assembly enters its final week.
Well, we did hear from some African leaders today, and they are concerned about terrorism. The representative of Niger spoke about how their country has had a growing problem with it since Libya fell in 2011 and Gaddafi was ousted because of the spread of small arms throughout the African continent. So definitely that was a concern for Niger, for Cameroon. These are a couple of the countries we heard from on the continent today. We heard from the French foreign minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, who was here last week, but he recorded a video message which he left to be played today. And he spoke about a need for a summit among the permanent five members of the Security Council, which France is one of them, along with Britain, China, the United States, and Russia, about how they need to embark on a dialogue about arms control, about collective security. We also heard from leaders from the Middle East. The new Israeli Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, made his UN debut on Monday. And he spoke actually quite a bit about how Israel has fought back COVID, how they've been on the cutting edge of vaccinations, how they sort of pioneered this idea of a third booster shot. He said it's working really well and that people are much more protected with it and that Israel is on course to escape a fourth wave of COVID and not shut down its economy again, because a lot of countries have had to do that. But he also spoke about the threat from Iran regionally, as did the United Arab Emirates and some other countries from the region.
And so how did the France-US spat shape conversations at the General Assembly?
Well, you know, it really sort of overshadowed a lot of the week in a way. I think most journalists, we expected Afghanistan to really be the dominant issue because it was, you know, so much is happening there at the moment, and it leaves so many regions in a quandary about what's going to happen. Central Asia, the Russians are worried, South Asia is worried, the neighbors, India, Pakistan, and further afield, countries are worried. So we really expected that to dominate. But in the end, it was really this spat that France was quite upset with the U.S. in particular, but also with the Australians and the British over this deal, this new strategic partnership called AUKUS, Australia, UK, U.S., in which the Australians have decided to buy U.S. Nuclear submarine technology. And in doing so, they've basically broken a deal they had with the French to buy diesel-powered submarine technology from them. And so not only is this costing the French tens of billions of dollars in a lost contract, but it's really bruised their ego. And they were telling anyone who would listen last week, basically, that it has really dented their trust in some of the other partners in the NATO alliance. So there were calls towards the end of the week between President Biden and President Macron, telephone call. There was a face-to-face meeting between U.S. Secretary of State Blinken and Foreign Minister Le Drian, which seemed to have gone a long way to mending fences, but they say that there's still work to be done.
And speaking of Afghanistan, when we last spoke, the Taliban had requested to have their representative speak at the UN General Assembly. How did that play out?
Yeah, we were expecting them on Monday to be one of the last speakers and take the floor. But over the weekend, the Afghan mission here in New York notified the UN that they were withdrawing from the debate and that they wouldn't be speaking. So the mission here is represented by Ambassador Ghulam Azizai, and he was appointed by the previous government, but he still holds the credential. And the Taliban had sent a letter to the UN Secretary General about a week ago saying that they want their interim foreign minister to participate at UNGA, and they were replacing Ambassador Isaaczai. But they really can't do it yet because there's a UN General Assembly committee that needs to review this request, and they won't meet until earliest next month, possibly not even till November. We were expecting Ambassador Isaaczai to speak. I mean, he had said he was going to speak, but he withdrew his name. So something has happened in the interim, and I imagine it will start playing out here over the next few weeks as they have a showdown looming over who will control that seat. Because let's not forget also the Taliban, nobody has internationally recognized a government in Afghanistan yet.
That was VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. She joined me from the UN headquarters in New York. And French President Emmanuel Macron was hit on the shoulder by an egg thrown at him during a visit to an international food trade fair in the French city of Lyon. AP correspondent Charles Deladesma has more.
A video of the incident, widely shared on social media, shows Macron walking through a crowd when an egg bounced off him without breaking. Two bodyguards can be seen immediately getting closer to the president and a man being taken away from the scene by other bodyguards. Reporters there heard Macron saying, "If he has something to tell me, then he can come." In June, Macron was slapped in the face by a man as he was greeting the public in a small town in southeastern France. I'm Charles Deladesma.
A federal judge says that Ronald Reagan's would-be assassin can be freed from all remaining restrictions next year. AP Washington correspondent Sega Megani reports.
Judge Paul Friedman says he'll rule this week on a plan that would release John Hinckley Jr. from all court supervision in June if he remains mentally stable and keeps following the rules that were imposed after he left a Washington hospital 5 years ago. Hinckley was 25 when he shot and wounded President Reagan in 1981. A jury found him not guilty by reason of insanity. Friedman says the now 66-year-old Hinckley has shown no symptoms of active mental illness, violent behavior, or interest in weapons since 1983. Sagar Magani at the White House.
And Japan threw six Southeast Asian countries into a frenzied security alert after it sent warnings to its citizens to stay away from crowded areas and religious gatherings because of potential attacks from Islamist militants. Reporter Stanley Buenafe Gajete has more from Manila in the Philippines.
The Japanese government warned its citizens in six Southeast Asian nations, instructing them to stay away from crowded areas and religious gatherings because of potential terror attacks from Islamist militants. Diplomatic and security officials in the Philippines caught by surprise, although the military forces in the volatile southern Philippines have not lowered their guards as threats from the Abu Sayyaf and other militant groups like the Maute group are constant. Counter-terrorist expert Romel Banlawi, who has been watching developments in Mindanao, believe there was a credible threat.
Malakas naman yung intelligence.
He said that Japan has strong intelligence agencies and that Japan won't release an advisory without solid basis. The said country has legitimate reasons in releasing such kind of threat. It has something to do with Islamic State Khorasan, which has a very strong relationship with Islamic East Asia. Islamic State militants in the Middle East have strong linkages with like-minded extremist groups in the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Myanmar, and Thailand. Anti-terrorism expert Banlawi said he was surprised when Japan did not include Brunei on the list, when in fact it should be included. The said countries are part of Islamic State East Asia Reliant, which has a strong relationship with Islamic State Khorasan. ISIS Central is funding terrorist activities in Southeast Asia. At the start of September, remnants of the Maute group, which had occupied Marawi City for 5 months in 2017, had clashes with the Philippine Army in Lanao del Sur in the southern part of the Philippines. The Islamic State had recognized its fighters were the ones responsible for the attack in an army outpost in the southern Philippines. The expert also said there were other activities that suggest Maute group and Abu Sayyaf group are active again. Banlawi said these extremist groups could be planning suicide bombing. Five country say bombing incidents were recorded since 2017 and were carried out by foreigners, including women and children. They could be planning in urban centers like Metro Manila. The Armed Forces of the Philippines said it has raised threat warning to moderate level, even though there is no detailed information yet. According to the military spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Ramon Zagala.
Terrorism knows no border, no? But it doesn't mean we will let our guards down. We constantly monitor and be vigilant.
Islamist militant attacks are expected to increase as extremists around the world have been inspired by the swift victory of the Taliban in Afghanistan last month. What countries around the world need to do now is to stay vigilant.
There's a reason to be worried, but we should continue to live our lives. But by living our lives, we need to remain cautious and vigilant. And people's participation includes a vigilant citizenry.
For VOA News, I am Stanley Buenafegehete in Manila, Philippines.
Voice of America!
Israel troops killed 4 Hamas militants in gun battles during raids on Sunday against one of the group's cells in the occupied West Bank, an Israel military spokesperson said. Hamas confirmed the men were members. Lucy Felder of Reuters has more.
Israeli troops killed at least 4 Hamas militants in gun battles on Sunday in raids against one of the group's cells in the occupied West Bank. That's according to an Israeli military spokesman who said an Israeli officer and a soldier were also critically wounded and 4 more Palestinians arrested. Israeli officials have long said Hamas, which runs the Gaza Strip, intends to gain strength in the West Bank so it can challenge its rival there, the Western-backed Palestinian Authority. This Palestinian resident of the village of Beit Anan heard the raid before dawn and says he saw soldiers carrying 2 bodies. The shootouts marked the most serious violence between Israel and Hamas since an 11-day Gaza war in May and threatened to raise tensions in the West Bank and along the Israeli border with Gaza. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas accused Israel of, quote, field executions against our people. A Hamas spokesman confirmed the men were members of the group, which Israel and the West regard as a terrorist organization. Hamas called on Palestinians in the West Bank to, quote, escalate resistance against the occupier in all areas. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, en route to the UN in New York, said the Hamas men were, quote, about to carry out terrorist attacks.
That was Reuters' Lucy Felder. And 3 teenagers have been revealed as the brains behind one of Australia's most authoritative COVID-19 tracking sites. From Sydney, Phil Masser reports.
In the pandemic, numbers are everything. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian is one of millions of Australians tracking the vaccination rates, hoping to get the numbers high enough that lockdowns can end. She gave an update in Sydney on Monday.
Pleasingly, we've officially passed the 85% first dose vaccination in New South Wales, which is just outstanding. And we're looking forward, obviously, to seeing that number continue. So can I please encourage everybody in New South Wales to come forward and get vaccinated?
Tracking a mountain of statistics is complex and time-consuming. One of the most comprehensive COVID-19 monitoring sites in Australia is run by 3 teenagers in Melbourne. The website COVIDBaseAU has been collating coronavirus statistics since April 2021, breaking down Australian and global data on infections, hospitalisations, deaths and vaccinations. It was a project that started as a hobby for teenagers interested in coding and the media. Their website has become a trusted source of information. The site is run by 15-year-old Jack and his 2 friends.
It's important in providing a sort of centralized and easy way to access a lot of the data. And I think in making sure that we track the data every single day, we're sort of able to give a lot of context behind all the data, which some government sites might not be able to do.
For months, the boys wanted to be anonymous, but they were revealed as the brains behind COVIDBaseAU when they posted a picture on Twitter after they'd been vaccinated. Jack and his friends say that despite the demands of their tracking website, they're keeping up with their schoolwork.
At the beginning, firstly, we sort of just thought that people might not find us as reliable if we were sort of kids, but we have seen that Australia's Health Minister, Greg Hunt, he congratulated us, and I saw Victoria's Chief Health Officer, he retweeted our thing. So it has been pretty special to see that happen.
Millions of Australians in Canberra, Melbourne and Sydney remain in lockdown as Delta variant infections continue to rise. About 97,500 coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the pandemic began. 1,231 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And homicides in the US increased by nearly 30% last year compared to 2019, part of an overall increase in violent crime in the country. That is according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In its annual crimes statistics report, the FBI said that nearly 1.3 million violent crimes were committed in the US last year. That's up from 5.6% from 2019, and the first time the figure had risen in 4 years. Singer R. Kelly has been convicted of racketeering by a federal jury in Brooklyn. Kelly has been on trial in New York for one count of racketeering, with 14 underlying acts that included sexual exploitation of a child, kidnapping, bribery, and sex trafficking charges. He was also charged with 8 additional counts of violations of the Mann Act, that is, a sex trafficking law. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Scientists at the Space Telescope Science Institute, home of the Hubble, have released new information about Jupiter's iconic giant red spot. Here is VOA's Rick Pantaleo with today's Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
Jupiter's giant red spot is one of the planet's most prominent features. The red spot is actually a huge storm that has been raging in the planet's southern hemisphere for several hundred years. Scientists say the giant red spot is 1.3 times larger than Earth, rotates in a counterclockwise direction, and its wind speeds can be more than 673 kilometers per hour. According to a news release from the Space Telescope Science Institute, the operations center for the Hubble, the winds in the outermost area of the giant red spot have increased by 8% between 2009 and 2020, while winds in the inner regions are slowing down. This increase in wind speeds calculates to a yearly gain of about 2.5 kilometers per hour. Scientists frequently monitor Jupiter and its giant red spot with the Hubble Space Telescope. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Indian farmers opposed to new reforms and laws will continue the longest-running growers' protest against Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government. The farmers say that the reforms threaten their livelihoods a year after laws on the liberalization of the sector were introduced. Soraya Ali of Reuters has more.
Indian farmers took to the streets once again on Monday in nationwide protests, 1 year on since the government introduced reforms which they say threaten their livelihood. Video footage showed police clashing with protesters in the city of Chennai as they tried to force barricades down. Others were forcibly detained. Tens of thousands of farmers have camped out on major highways around the capital, New Delhi, since the legislation was introduced in September last year. The new law allows farmers to sell produce to buyers beyond government-regulated wholesale markets, where growers are assured of a minimum price. Small farmers say the changes make them vulnerable to competition from big business and that they could eventually lose price supports for staples like wheat and rice. The government says the reforms mean new opportunities and better prices for farmers. Earlier this month, more than 500,000 farmers attended a rally in Uttar Pradesh. It was the biggest yet in the protest campaign to step up pressure on Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government to repeal the laws. The protests have been generally peaceful, but police and farmers clashed in New Delhi in January during a tractor procession. One protester was killed and more than 80 police were injured.
That was Soraya Ali of Reuters. The Cumbre Vieja volcano in the Spanish Canary Islands continues to spew lava and debris 1 week after it erupted and forced thousands of people to flee their homes. A local airport was reopened, but planes remained grounded as ash clogs runways and lava fills the skies. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Drone images show lava running down the Cumbre Vieja volcano as the eruption wreaks havoc on the Canary island of La Palma. Satellite imagery shows the eruption from space. On Sunday, Pope Francis spoke of the disaster from Vatican City.
I express closeness and solidarity to those affected by the eruption. I'm thinking especially of those forced to leave their homes, for these people so tried by sufferings, and for the rescuers. We pray to the Madonna venerated on that island as Our Lady of Snows.
Spain's National Geographical and Mining Institute says its drones captured these images of the volcano's cone collapsing under its own weight. La Palma is home to more than 83,000 people, and around 6,000 have been forced to evacuate since lava began devouring their homes last week. Donation centers like this one at a local sports complex have sprung up to distribute food and clothes. And those searching for a way off the island encountered long lines at ferry terminals as the airport remained closed until Sunday. Ash on the runways and lava spewing into the sky mean that for now, planes will remain on the ground. Authorities report no fatalities or serious injuries from the eruption, but as much as 15% of the island's banana crops could be at risk, threatening thousands who depend on the industry for work. Farmers warn that lava flowing to the sea could affect irrigation pipes for the entire region. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And Botswana is set to emerge this week from an 18-month state of emergency that will remove the president's emergency powers and end pandemic restrictions on trade and gatherings. While many shops, bars, and restaurants want to get back to normal, some in Botswana's alcohol industry say that it's too soon to lift restrictions on night spots. Mkondisi Dube reports.
The Minister of Trade and Industry, Kafela Musi, says the end of the edict set for this Thursday means businesses can revert to normal trading hours. This includes the reopening of night spots. That should be welcome news to Botswana's alcohol industry, which employs around 50,000 people, including those who work at bars, breweries and distributors. But Botswana Beverages Association President Peter Noke warns some establishments might not be ready to reopen. Those that do will likely have restrictions, including a ban on dancing.
Re kopile gore mo bogompieno di dance floors a di club gona me go replace.
He said they have requested that dance floors be converted into sitting areas. There should be sufficient spacing between the tables and there will be no dancing, he said. If one wishes to dance, Noke said, they can only do so while seated. Music promoter Zane Aftermath says the decision to eliminate the dance floor is ill-advised.
How are you going to open clubs and then you say people should not dance? It doesn't make sense. I wouldn't leave my house to go to a nightclub and pay and buy alcohol so that I can sit on a chair. It's going to affect attendance at the club in a huge way.
Workers union leader Johannes Tsugudu welcomes the reopening as entertainment industry workers have been mostly out of work since March of last year. But he too urges caution.
We don't expect full capacity at the beginning. We may decide to have either half capacity of the venue so that at least we use that as an observation element. Because we don't want to see this thing as a trap by government to justify reintroduction of the state of emergency.
Minister Kafela says the government will keep an eye on night spots to ensure compliance with the rules. Mkwandisi Dube for VOA News, Haboroni.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. And be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great week ahead.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization
and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with Reliable.